Girls Gone Boss is the driven woman's guide to love, life, and business. Hosted by the entrepreneur and music industry veteran, Gabby Ortega. Her network gathers an array of women from various industries who exemplify strength and tenacity. Every conversation will inspire the boss in you. Welcome to Girls Gone Boss.
Welcome to a new episode of Girls Gone Boss. It's season 6. I'm your host, Gabby Ortega. And if you're new to the podcast, I am a music industry veteran, and I love putting together conversations that are impactful and meaningful. And this season, I'm so excited because I'm going to remix some of the episodes, starting with BFF Edition. These episodes, I'm going to include some of my best friends that I have had the pleasure and the honor to grow up with or just be around, just so that you guys could get to know me better and also my tribe. And I also am a believer that you need to give your flowers when they're due, and that is now, not later. Today, I have an amazing human who I happen to know since I was 12 years old. So this is like 30-year relationship, probably my biggest commitment I ever had in my life. Never been married, but I definitely been married to Bridget. This is a woman that walks to the beat of her own drum. She's a hustler. She's a queen connector. She is just a creative, beautiful person that is the life of the party, but she could also be tender, soulful, and about nature and connecting with spirituality. So she's a, you know, she's a hybrid of a lot of things, and I really love her and admire her. She has her own company, Me Plus One, which we'll hear more about. She's worked in the music industry, entertainment industry, TV. She's worked with celebrities like Sean Puffy Combs, French Montana, Mike Epps. The long list goes on and on. She's worked with brands like Ciroc, Doucet, Blue Sapphire.
Bombay Sapphire.
Bombay Sapphire. but the list goes on. But the most important part is that she is courageous. She's amazing. She's smart. She's beautiful. And she's one of my BFFs. So welcome to the BFF edition. Welcome, Bridget Hall. Everybody, yeah. What's up, girl?
What's up, girl?
You made it onto the podcast.
I feel famous. Yeah. I feel like I should have got a glam squad, but here we are.
Well, next time you let me know, girl.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on my writer. Okay, thank you.
So, 12 years old. I think you were younger than me. You were like 11.
I was 11, so it was definitely summer 92 because it was right after Hurricane Andrew. Because remember, I think my school had some damage and I came to your school for the first couple of weeks.
Right, because... Yeah. I used to go to summer school not because I did bad in class.
No, but it just wasn't summer school. No. It was my school had some damage. So like we went to Debonair for like the first month of school before I went back to my school.
What I recall the most is that we used to go. Did we egg your house or was it that we went and egged houses together?
No, we used to egg houses throughout Debonair.
But why?
Because we were hanging out with all these bad guys.
Fernando, Kiki. Yeah. Oh, my God. That happens all the time. We're good? Do we wait? We wait. Oh, keep going. Okay.
But yeah, all the Nicaraguans in Debonair, all those boys, remember, they would freeze the eggs so that it would cause more damage and be hard when they would hit the walls and the cars. So
Bridget, she's Jamaican and French. So she's mixed.
Yeah.
But she grew up in Kendall, in Miami. We grew up in Kendall. And it's full of Latinos.
Yeah.
So you might as well speak Spanish, you know?
I mean, I kind of do.
Exactly. Tell us about 11-year-old Bridget, though. You were a cute girl, I remember.
I mean, I was kind of cute. 11-year-old Bridget was in sixth grade and getting ready to go to seventh and see where all the new boys were and live a life. I liked hip-hop, but not as much as I love it now. But yeah, it was
so just... What music were you listening to back then? Like New Kids on the Block?
I mean, not in sixth grade, but yeah, I was definitely an NKOTB fan. I listened to mainstream and pop. I didn't really have my fall in love with hip hop moment truly until the Hard Knock Life tour senior year.
I have a story for that tour as well.
I mean, I have so many stories.
What's the story? What's your story? I'll tell you my story.
I mean, there's so many. No, it was just amazing. Like I, as you guys will learn, I'm a humongous Jay-Z fan, which is part of the
our love language.
Yeah, it's our love language. And that was the night I fell in love with Hove. Like, I had gone there to see Method Man and Redman, and Hove closed the show.
And they were flying.
And it was amazing. And I was in the sixth row. Yeah.
Thanks to Jamie.
He closed the show with 22 twos, and my life was changed forever. And I was like, what just happened?
And that's when I started doing the deep dive into everything that I missed and got all caught up.
It's funny because my journey into music was originally because of hip hop. Mm-hmm. And
same.
I think my dream was like, oh my God, I want to work at Def Jam, or I want to work like with Russell Simmons. Like everything was about.
Thank God we dodged that bullet.
Yeah, thank God we didn't. God had a plan for us. But then naturally because of my background, I ended up in Latin, but my heart was always hip hop.
It's crazy. That was it's surprising to me when I talk to you now. I try to bring up anything hip hop, and you're like, "What? I don't know who that is. I'm so sorry. I have no idea who that is."
I mean, the new guys, I don't. But you tell me about Jay, of course, or Nas, or I feel like we sound like old ass people.
We are, but we're cool, not like other old people.
But okay, so 11-year-old Bridget, we met, and look at us now. This is 31 years later. I love the story of your mom and dad, right? Because I think that was a pivotal moment for, first of all, your career choices, your love for New York, your love for music, your affinity to, are you going to sneeze?
No, sorry. This seltzer kind of,
and
it came through my nose.
Sorry. It does work. Good job.
It worked. Thank you.
So your affinity to music, your affinity to DJs, because that's where it all started.
I mean, and I think that was on a subconscious level. I don't think it was a conscious
thing. It's crazy to me because I think without us even knowing, our parents are so influential to our upbringing. Like, who are we around? Because my dad was a commentator for baseball.
Which is insane.
And he basically was podcasting back in the day about baseball. And so for me, it was wow, it's in your blood.
Both of our fathers passed away when we were younger, so it wasn't we had necessarily that influence. But again, it's in our DNA.
So tell me about that. And tell the story of how they met, because I think it's so cute.
I mean, they met in the club. I don't really know the story to be that extravagant, but they met in the club. My father was a musician and a DJ. And then, of course, they had me.
But they were in New York. Your mom's from New York.
My mom's from Miami, but she moved to New York when she was 18. She was helping her boyfriend dodge the draft, and they were driving to Canada. And then when they got to New York, she broke up with him and was like, I'm going to stay here, and stayed there for 20 years. But it was interesting because I, being a typical Miami girl, I started clubbing at 13. And so 2 years after I met you on the playground, we were at Cream on Fifth. That was my first club, and I just felt very compelled to go to the DJ and tell him what to play and tell him what to do, which later parlayed into managing DJs and whatnot. And what made that kind of come full circle with my father was a movie that he did called Rockers, which is a huge movie in Jamaican culture. And the most famous scene is when he literally, and that was a movie that I hadn't really ever paid attention to or watched, but there's a scene where he's in the club, he didn't like what the DJ was playing, and he walks over to the DJ booth and he's like, yeah, I'm here to change the mood, you need to get out, I'm gonna change. And he pulls the DJ out and he starts playing what he wants to hear. So it's that is really in my DNA, aside from just telling people what to do, but especially DJs.
She's a Sagittarius guy.
I am, yeah.
Mandona, keep going.
I don't know if that answers your question, but I just, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that's so interesting, and I think that's a very important part of who you became and what your journey looked like as far as career.
And I mean, I think my draw to New York is probably everyone's draw to New York. And then hip hop too. And that's where Def Jam was. And that's where all the labels were. We didn't really have labels here at the time outside of Latin. And then of course for our generation, Sex and the City, I was I want to be there. I want to live a life and be outside. So
was that your first tell us about the start of your jobs in the industry. Did you move to New York first?
No. So, okay. Hard Knock Life tour happens. I'm like, oh my God.
You were 17. No, 16.
No, I was 17 because it was
senior. Okay.
I was 17. We got a call from Danielle, who was doing some work with Sony, had a studio out here. So we had no idea what Street Team was.
And she's just like, hey, we need some girls to pass out flyers for this music conference, which is essentially Street Team. So we skipped school. Don't do that. And we skipped school and we went and passed out flyers at Impact, which was music conference 1999. I think it was at the Eden Rock that year.
I remember passing out flyers with you.
Yeah. So that was after.
Remember?
Yes.
We were all in one hotel room.
Yeah. That was like, that was that September. So we're right now in May. We're still in high school. We're, you know, whatever. So at the time I was still like, I'm going to go into medical school. I'm going to do sports medicine. Like that was always
the plan. I didn't know that that's what
you
wanted to do.
Always the plan. I wanted to be the first female, like the first head female NFL trainer in the league. Yeah, because at the time there was no one. Then someone became, I think, for Pittsburgh Steelers. But anyways, that was the goal. So we're at the Eden Rock and Jamie, who was a huge hip hop head, like she was into Wu-Tang and Beatnuts and like all these things. We're there and everybody on the posters on her wall is there. And I'm like, Jamie, go take pictures, go talk to these people, whatever. And you know me, I talk to everyone. And I'm seeing everybody smoking weed, drinking alcohol, talking about hip hop all day long. And I'm like, what is this job? I want this job. I love hip hop. I like to partake in extracurricular activities. What is this? And I just started talking to everyone. And at the time there weren't music business programs. There wasn't, you kind of just had to know someone. Everybody I spoke to either dropped out of college or didn't go. And I'm like, well, I kind of need a plan. So anyways, I got everyone's number. Cool. Fast forward, we graduate high school. I should have brought the picture. I have the picture of the night. It was like 2 days after we graduated high school. I went to St. Croix with Jamie in the Grove. And she had already been clubbing with DJ Epps and Nightbreeders and all of them. They were the only industry people that I had, you know, contact with. And I went up to them and I was just like, hey, I want to be in the industry. I don't know where to start. Can you guys help me? And they were like, we need a door girl. Can you start tomorrow? And I was like, okay.
A door girl. Okay, door can girl. You explain what a door girl does?
I mean, I think everybody knows what a door girl does. Like you run the door at a club. And you're like, you, not you. You guys, come. So from that kind of like had me on the scene. And once I'm anywhere, I start talking to everyone.
And it gave you some sort of power if you're like letting people in and out or not.
Yeah. From that music conference at Impact, because I did do a good job, that was for Tommy Boy Records. They in turn gave my information to Rough Nation, who then called me that fall to put together a Street Team for Mix Show Power Summit. Then I met the people who ran Mix Show Power Summit, parlayed that into helping them put together packages, and it just kind of, like, it grew from there. Then I had a moment where I fell out of love with the music industry for all of the many reasons. Like, I was just tired of, even though I was, like, 19, 20, I felt like I had already proven myself, and I don't know if the industry's changed, which I hope it has, but I was just tired of men being inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think a lot of us run into that.
Yeah, I mean, especially for our generation, like there was a lot of that. And so I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I thought that Hollywood would be the lesser of the two evils. So I decided to go into production and film. And then
you met Benny.
Well, before I met Benny, a friend asked me to work the Source Awards in 2004, which was cool and kind of made me remember why I love hip hop. Then I did BET Awards, met Benny, got the job in Paramount Pictures, went to LA for a year and a half. And then after realizing that this was also equally, if not more, evil than the music industry, in 2007, went back to New York, went back to hip hop, and went back to music.
Okay, so let's land in New York.
Mm-hmm.
This is a time you're working with Puff.
No, Christy, Kid Capri, Idris, Mike Epps, Camp Lo, Styles P, The Locks, love them.
Love them.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your experience in New York. New York obviously is, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. So how, I think that's where you get your thick skin from. I mean.
I think I just have thick skin and I'm a Sag and I'm awesome. but I mean, New York was an experience. It was great. And I was an assistant. All of my friends were assistants. And so we were kind of just like all like, you know, working towards our dreams together. I learned a lot. I love my old boss, and I hope she never sees this, but I used to always joke, I'm like, the devil wears Old Navy too, she doesn't just wear Prada. But some of the hard lessons that she drove home for me in that experience, I stay true to this day, and were building blocks that I took away from her to this day and have helped me in every step along the way, even if they were hard to receive.
What are those? I would love for you to share them with our listeners.
I'll share it, but I feel like this new generation, like, they can't even handle, like, those kinds of things. But, like, for example, you know, I was young, I was green. And so I remember, like, I think, like, once we were in a meeting, maybe at MTV or something, and I spoke during the meeting, which in reality, as an assistant, like, that's not my place to speak. And so, like, when we walked out, she definitely yoked me up, like, grabbed my arm, like, don't ever speak out of, you know, like, things like that I had to learn.
So you could say that that's more like read the room, like, know when it's your moment to...
Well, no, if you're an assistant, unless your boss is asking your opinion, shut up. Like, it's not... You're here to assist your boss.
And to absorb, learn.
That's it. And mm-hmm. if you have something you want to say, text your boss or wait till after the meeting. Period. It's not read the room. The room is shut your mouth. Or shut the fuck up, which is what I want to say, so we can cuss. Yeah.
Yeah, you could cuss.
Yeah.
Okay, and what's another one?
One of the ones I learned coming up, which I think it goes out the door now, I used to work at MTV, and my boss then would be very, very meticulous about, like, when artists come in, mm-hmm. do not ask for pictures.
Oh,
like, you have to make it a safe space for them, and it can't be that you're a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would never ask for pictures. And I have worked with amazing people, like Carol G, I've worked with her. Well, I met her when she was, like, just starting. J Balvin, all these people, Maluma. And we would be, like, so, like, hell no, I'm not going to ask for a picture.
Once I started working, I mean, no one needed to tell me that. I don't think they needed to tell you that either.
No, they did, because they were just like, please don't do it. Because then, you know, you want to, like, take a picture. And now, obviously, everyone's like, oh, let's do it for the gram. So I don't think that even...
Now, isn't that crazy how it's different? But it's like, back then, I want to say the minute I started working in the industry, like... You know, you and I used to take a million pictures. We have pictures of everything. And even my photo album stops, like, right at where we started working in the industry, at least of any celebrities, because it was like, you just can't until
now. Yeah, even when, because me and Bridget, we have so many stories of club life. If I clubbed
at club life 15, and Jay-Z, for sure.
And Jay-Z. We have clubbed with Jay-Z.
Yeah, multiple times.
I told Damon Dash off one
she
night.
She did. Yes.
So anyways, where were we going with this?
I'm not sure. Lessons that we learned.
Oh, yeah.
On the job.
So what else did you learn?
I'm trying to think. I mean, just like production stuff, detail-oriented stuff, which I kind of already was like that. But like show reports, like if you have an artist on the road, my goal always is to make it where people don't have to call me. I don't want to be called in the middle of the night and then you don't know where your hotel, like, so it's just like triple checking all of your details, making sure all of the information is there, being super organized, not sleeping with clients, you know, things like that. But that stuff all kind of came into play.
Yeah, because I think the industry is like, there's a lot of blurs, lines.
The industry is like high school. It's literally one giant high school.
And maybe when you say the industry, you're talking about hip-hop industry, right?
No, honestly, not even. Entertainment, sports, music, film, they all cross paths. We're all at the same events. We all, like, some artists want to be athletes, some athletes want to be artists, and everybody in between is in Hollywood. So as much, maybe you can call those three high schools that sometimes mix. No, literally, like when I explain.
And the award shows are like the pep rally.
But that's what I was going to say. I'm like, that's how I explain it to my non-industry friends. I'm like, homecoming, MTV Awards. Spring dance, Grammys, Oscars, Golden Globes, whatever. Spring break, Coachella.
Oh my God.
And then,
this is so insane.
But it's never true. And because I've done all those things, and like after summer is BET Awards. And then what else is in between? NBA All-Star, NBA Finals, Super Bowl. Because once I got into event life, I'm going to all of those things. It's literally, you see the same people everywhere. So that's why I'm like, it's high school. You see the same people. The same people are dealing with each other. The person who was at Sony is now at Warner. The person who was at Warner is now at this. And it's just like, we're a hodgepodge of just mixing, matching all across the board.
And how did you stay relevant within that space?
you know, being so saturated. And like, so I would think like high school, some people get more privileged than others.
And they do. And I'm sure it's still like that for me. I have my lane. You can count on me. I'm good at what I do and I have great relationships. So I think that's
and your reputation. I think reputation is key,
which is, yeah, you can count on me. So it's like, I think that's what's kept me going. And I'm just multifaceted. Like I can kind of do a million different things.
You can.
Yeah.
I would recommend you with my eyes closed.
I mean, duh.
I have.
And it's been great. Shout out to Warner.
Yes. Well, speaking of tribes, like that's how we empower each other. Yeah. I think, you know, I happen to have a lot of friends in my same industry. And if I can empower you to bring your skills and shine somewhere, I will.
And that's I'm exactly grateful. What you and did. Thank you. I love
you. And you killed it. I mean, everyone at Warner was super happy with you. So we're good. Okay. So that's great. So then you're in music. Transitioned into film.
No, film. Well, I guess, yeah. Music, some events. Film, artist management.
Which was like the DJs, no?
Mm-hmm. Well, not just DJs. We had The Lox. We had Kid Capri. We had Idris Elba and his music pursuits. And Mike Epps as well on the same lane. Camp Low. And then I came to Miami and had Effect, and then was working with Irie and doing the bookings for the clubs. Then I went back to New York and started doing events, which then, and I had a lot of friends that worked at All Things Puff, Bad Boy, Blue Flame, which is his marketing agency, Sean John, and they had dropped lines like, oh, you should come work here, you should come work here, but I had always heard that it was absolutely an insane place. So I was always like, okay, I don't think so. And then finally I started working there and it was exactly everything that I had heard about, but it was wild and crazy and fun. And like, I always think of you when it comes to like my Puff memories, because like you know what I mean? Like I knew you when we were listening to Puff, when Biggie and Mace and everybody came out. And then when we went to our first Puff New Year's Eve party, I think we've been to three together. It was me and you. So it was like, to be in that building is epic.
Epic.
Epic as hell.
Especially for us that like grew up with the love of hip hop that we mm-hmm. had. Like I feel sometimes these people were like unattainable to us because we're like, we were like super fans.
Yeah.
Like when we saw Jay-Z that summer, I mean, yeah, that summer
Memorial Day
weekend, 2000, we just saw him on a scooter running. This is when Jay-Z.
Well, no, we saw him on the corner. Remember? We were in the cab.
And we had our.
I was ready with my disposable camera.
Disposable camera. And we were like, excuse me, Mr. Jay-Z.
We are not cornballs. Stop it. Do not.
But we were just like so in awe that saw him.
That was my goal for the weekend. I was like, I'm getting a picture with Hove. And he was like, nah. And
he
like,
said, no, I'm sorry. We can't. We're like, crushed your dreams.
Yeah. So my picture is of Jay-Z riding away on his scooter.
I'm like, Hove. That was, I mean, honestly. But we ended up partying with him at the club.
Yeah. It's not the same, but whatever.
It's not the same, but what I'm saying is like we were real fans of the culture.
Yeah.
So for us to be like at Puff's house.
No, that like, was, I'm so happy that I was able to do that with you multiple times.
Yeah. Cause like, I mean, hip hop is, it's a culture. It's like a vibe. It's a lifestyle. Like, and we lived that. And when we were there, like I remember even his late wife, what was her name? Kim Porter.
Oh, I was like, Jay? What?
No, Kim yeah. Porter walking by.
I mean, everybody was
there. Everyone was there. And it was just like.
I was having flashbacks of that night.
I literally would just sit down with a drink and just watch everyone. Because I was like, bro, I'm like. And hip-hop royalty, you know. It's
eating burgers and, yeah, living a life.
Yeah, with Salt Bae.
Oh, no, that was recently, but yeah.
That was the third time?
Yeah.
but thanks to you, girl.
It was epic. You didn't come the year that I produced it, did you? No, you didn't.
Why not?
I think you were in Paris or something.
I just went to Paris this year.
You were flying somewhere private.
Private?
With your London. Sister. Yeah.
London.
London, Paris.
You know, flying private. Like of nothing. Anyway, I want to talk about hip hop, and obviously it was a tough genre. It's a tough space to
male dominated space.
Mm-hmm. So how did you like, you know, manage all of that? And
I mean, I think being a Sagittarius, and I'm sorry to get like all, you know, astrological on you, but I just think that helps definitely. I'm just very strong willed. And in 99, when I started
working with the people at Mixshow Power Summit, Terrence Brown was one of the partners.
I remember Terrence.
Yeah. And Terrence pulled me aside and
pause. This thing is popping.
Delicious.
Like, yeah. I already feel
if
like
you could send a case to Girls Gone Boss, like, that would be amazing.
But I'm not even like,
send a case.
I'm not
send
even halfway case. Done.
Casa Lu, send a case.
Hey, girl.
We need this for every interview. Thank you very much. Whoa. But what was I saying? I forgot.
Hip hop.
Casa Lu got us drunk over here. This turning into drink champs. No, I was telling you something important. Oh, Terrence had pulled me aside and he said to me, he was like, listen, and again, for the righteous new generation, they would probably like file suit with this commentary. But like in 1999, he was like, you got this job because of how you look. You were able to keep this job because you're actually good and you're smart. And he said, he's like, if you listen to anything I tell you, listen to this. Every single man that you come across in this industry is trying to smash. Use it to your advantage. Do not fuck anyone and get money. And I was like, all right. And I think that's...
And you got a couple bags.
Yeah. So it's like, I managed... It's like, again, should men behave that way? No, whatever. But it's like, you just kind of like, you know, when they're inappropriate, you're like, oh, you're so funny. Listen, let's talk about the job. And, you know, you just...
But isn't it sad that we have to do that? Like,
and what's sad is that it was worse for our parents. You know, right. At least it's progressing and it's better for the kids today.
No, I think today there's no tolerance. It's zero tolerance, I feel.
And HR apparently is real, which is interesting. It was never real for us.
Well, what I'm saying is it's sad that we have to kind of like walk around those like, you know.
Yeah. And for me, situation. Like, I mean, again, like out the gate, out of high school, I was like, I'm working in the clubs, male dominated. I manage a barbershop, male dominated. I'm in entertainment, male dominated. So it's like, you got to learn how
and
to
then
manage.
They wonder why our energy is masculine, right?
No, and I had to like, if we're flipping to personal life, like I had to really do a deep dive in order to kind of dial that back because so much of my day to this day is telling grown men what to do. And so you gotta, when you get home, you gotta learn to kind of put on your feminine hat.
How do you go into your feminine as a very masculine? Because I am also very obviously masculine because I just feel like in the industry that we're in, we have to show up as like leaders and make decision makers and also just fight to be heard sometimes, you know?
Well, I actually was fighting to be heard this morning before I came to this. Like,
it never stops.
Dealing with a man, trying to tell him what to do, and him continuously talking over me. And instead of screaming and fighting, what I resort to now is I'm just like, excuse me, are you going to let me speak? Because I'm speaking. So are you ready to let me finish my sentence? Let me know when it's my turn. And then they shut the fuck up, and then I speak.
But isn't it crazy that it came down for us to be in our 40s to be like, bruh. Because in my 20s, I was like, oh, I'm just going to stay quiet about it.
No, never. Know? I was never quiet. Never. Okay, well, never.
Sometimes I would say.
No, never. I would cuss a nigga out it real quick. I have no shame. But I would match your energy and get equally loud. Mm-hmm. But as far as learning when to dial it back, I started to kind of have the realization around 28, like, and started doing experiments. And like realizing like in personal life, like I don't have to always be right. Even if I know I'm right, I know. I don't have to drive the message home to you. So I started literally letting men think they were right in a discussion, an argument, whatever. And I saw how well that worked for me. And so in my mind, I just look at it like acting. It's not lying. I just be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You're right. It's not true, but whatever. So it works.
You set the ego aside.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm the boss at work. It's fine. You can be the boss here if you want.
So let's talk about Me Plus One, because that's like something that you obviously shifted into from some all these skills that you gained throughout your career. Obviously, it was a lot of transferable skills into like full-time event planning. But what made you kind of like leap into your own entrepreneurial, you know, project?
I hate corporate. I'm not a corporate person. I don't do well in corporate bullshit and they're stupid conversations and meetings, and I'm just not a corporate person. I'm a free spirit. So it just kind of became the point where I needed to be my own boss and just kind of run my own thing. I do still and did still freelance with other event producers, but event life is really my passion. I love it. And from management to marketing to film to TV to working in clubs, all of those things. First of all of those things at some point involve event production. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, starting Me Plus One was just a to the system. It's like, I'm going to do my own thing.
Very Sagittarius.
Yeah.
So tell us about Me Plus One. Like, how's it going? Like,
it's going good. I mean, you know, when COVID happened, obviously our entire entertainment world was shut down with no future start date. So I did do a pivot. I have some celebrity friends. And so I became a house manager, which I don't know how being a regular house manager is, but when you're a house manager to a big celebrity in hip hop, it's still like running an event because we have events like every day at the house. So that is my full time, and it's definitely not corporate, which is great. And so today's Me Plus One, I just take projects that I believe in or that I'm interested in, or, you know, past clients like Warner, who I love. But yeah, that's where Me Plus One is now. I just take what I want. I do what I want.
What I love about you is that you just are such a hustler because you just keep going. Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to learn this. I'm going to learn that. Like, you ended up as a house manager to a celebrity.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, a lot of people probably don't know that celebrities have house managers. So no. What do, like, it entails, like, then you run the whole house?
Everything. So, again, I don't know how regular rich people live their life, but, like, in the hip-hop house manager world, so it's... It can be anything from ordering groceries, managing staff, managing, there's always something breaking, the elevator, the this. So managing all those moving parts. Oh, we have not the president, but like the mayor will be coming over, or the prince from this place, and we're holding a huge dinner. We have to get, like, it's the same thing as managing event, managing multiple moving pieces, managing all of the different vendors, all of the different things. Like if and my boss is amazing, but it's like, I think he gets a thrill out of, you know, the art of surprise. So it'll be like, today we're having 50 people over. And it's like, you didn't want to tell us that last week. So it's like, now I have to call in extra staff. Now I have to call in. So like everything that I've learned along this journey lends to that, which is great. And I think that now I have other house manager friends. Like there's things that they never thought about, but I think about because in event world we do that. So I'm like, where's everybody's certificate of insurance? And let's see this and let's do that. And I get things in writing and I'm very different.
You're very detail-oriented. You have to be in that.
I am. And just anything that I don't know, I make myself very acquainted with it. I Google it. I find somebody who does know. I ask them immediately. Like when I started working in marketing, one of the first tasks my boss did was, she was like, I need you to, you know, buy X amount of ad campaigns across the country. I've never fucking done that. I don't fucking know how to do that. The fuck? And she gave me a budget. And I'm like, So I call my boy, who's a PD at one of the radio stations, and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? And then he told me, and he's like, this is what it should be. This is the verbiage, so you can sound like you know what you're talking about, this, that, and the other. And so it's like, just be resourceful. Like, there is nothing that I hate more. I mean, besides the word no, but that doesn't, I don't accept that, but it's, I don't know. I hate when people say, I don't know. It's like, bitch, find out. Google it. Ask your boss. I don't know. Like, find someone who does know. Don't you work here? What the fuck?
Yeah, but I think it's because we were raised without, like, Google. We had to figure shit out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
even now, Google, like, just Google it. Like, bruh.
Somebody today.
Now they have AI. They can do things for you.
I literally asked someone today to pick up something from the Faena, and they were like, do you have the address? I'm like, bitch, do you have Google? Hello? Like, oh, my God. All I'm going to do is Google it to send it to you.
I think maybe it's work ethic, you know? Like, or what is it? What do you think it is? Because you mentioned something about
this generation. They're just different. I feel like, and you know, obviously,
God bless y'all. I
you guys are great. Y'all. Like, you guys have changed. You know, men aren't being disgusting in the office anymore. But I just feel like, and again, I think that every older generation says this about the generation behind them. Like, in my day, you know. But I just feel like,
I know. Like, how did we become those people?
In 31 years, it happened. But I just feel like there's a sense of entitlement. And that they come out and they want to be like, I had an old assistant that was like, oh my God, you know, and she was not a good assistant. And she's like, oh my God, you know, I keep applying for these positions and I'm not getting it. I'm like, well, what positions are you applying for? And she was applying for like senior director of departments. And I'm like,
girl, because you are not freaking qualified. You're not even a good assistant. Like, you have to manage literally. Like, if I ask you to get me a Casalu limon, you need to make sure you need to make sure that it's that. You can't bring me the grape one. I asked you for a limon. Like, your attention to detail is trash. So why would I entrust you with anything greater, like running a department, if you can't handle basic shit? And that's what I think that they miss. And it's great. Like, yes, you can become a boss, you know, having YouTube and whatever. And that's great. But, like, there's just things that come with time. And I think that, you know, you have to learn and take the moments to ask the questions to the people who came before you. Because one, will help you skip a couple steps. And two, there's just things that you will never know until you have the actual experience.
Also, it's okay to ask. Like, I don't, like, I have an intern and I love it when she asks me questions because, like, yes. I don't expect her to know things.
Exactly. Like, you know? I've been on conference calls and they've said a word that I didn't know. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Hello? Excuse me. What's a luge? It was, we were doing Pups event and they kept saying, like, oh, we want to get a luge. Bridget, get a luge. I'm like, I don't know what a luge is. It's an ice sculpture where the liquor runs through it. But oh, I didn't know fucking idea. I was like, I don't know what that is. Like, you want me to get it? What is that? And I was like, all right, well, we can't get that. It's too late.
There's no stupid question.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's some stupid questions, but.
Well, okay, but let's shift now into what brings you joy. How do you find balance? How do you, like,
yoga? Yoga is a lifesaver, and therapy.
We got to get into therapy because yes. Bridget has been the one to really put me on to my therapist, who I love. Shout out to Navila.
Navila, we love you.
We love her.
We should send her this. Therapy is amazing. And I wish, like, if I could tell my younger self anything, it's like, bitch, go to therapy sooner. Like, I didn't start going to therapy until...
I think it was just taboo, like, or, like, very expensive or something.
I assumed it was expensive. And I just was like, I don't need that. Like, I got this. But no, I needed it. For sure.
Yeah, like whenever I'm like a meltdown, I'm thinking, Navila, do you have a space?
Literally.
And I'm 43 years old.
No, but at any age.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't care. Like, I'm gonna have Navila till she, either of us last.
I love her. She's the best. And luckily, she's younger than us, so she'll be around for a while.
Yes.
But yeah, yoga, honestly, like, I do spiritual stuff, Reiki. When I travel a lot, or when I travel anyways, like, I always have my travel yoga mat. I get up extra early to kind of just get my mind in the right space. And that's what brings me peace. Mm-hmm. When you had asked about me plus one earlier and where it was at, like, before, like, COVID for me was a gift and a curse. The curse because obviously quarantine sucks, what's happening in the world, it's scary, blah, blah, blah. But prior to that, like, I was on a plane, like, every other day. Like, at the TSA, they knew me. They'd be like, where are you off to now? Like, I was there all the time. And I thought that that was life. And that's what I love. And I could never live without it. And I couldn't stop. And it wasn't until COVID that I was forced to sit the fuck down and be with myself and be in my house. And I realized I didn't die. I actually kind of like being in my house. Because, like, you know.
Your family, your mom was safe.
I mean, yes, great, all of those things. But it was like, you know, I'm getting older, and it's like the life that I was living, the travel, I mean, there was times that I would travel to three different weather zones. Like, I'd have to have a sweater for this one, and then this, and back. And that's a lot on your body. And I was like, my body was starting to ache. Like, you get old, shit hurts. And then I'm like, if I'm gonna have a baby, how am I gonna fucking be on a plane all the time? Like, I've known women who were pregnant on production and had miscarried marriages during an award show. You know what I mean? And it's like, I was kind of like, what do I do? So COVID was a blessing because it forced me to pivot, and I have an amazing 9-to-5 that I love with the freedom to still do events when I feel like it.
I think that's where it's coming to. I think nowadays it's about, like, multiple streams of income.
Yeah.
It's about being multifaceted. It's about, like, finding different passion points and hustling because the bills are not going to get paid by themselves.
No, and I just, from a lifetime of hustling, like, I'm just always like,
what's next?
Nothing's too big, nothing's too small. I'm like, what's up? How much you got? All right, let's do it real quick. Like, why not?
Let's get money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have another thing in common. Both our dads died when we were young, and then we are solely, like, caretakers of our moms, of our aging parents. And, you know, that does
take a lot.
It does.
But it's something that I would do over three times over mm-hmm. because our moms are like so special to us.
Literally.
Yeah. So I'm so proud of you that you have taken that on, because I know how much it is, how easier it would be for us to be selfish about it and be like, peace, yeah. you know, but
I actually feel bad for the older people who like their kids are like, you know, far away and they don't get to see them. And
I think honestly, to be honest, I think because of us being with our moms, mm-hmm. They live longer.
100%. Like I see my mom's friends who don't have children, mm-hmm. who they don't have anyone to talk to. And I see their cognitive decline a lot faster. Like my mom would like talk shit about her friends like, oh, this one. And I'm like, they have no one.
Yeah. My mom has friends in living homes, or what is it mm-hmm. called?
Senior living, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Retirement homes. Senior living. And nobody goes sees them. So she goes sees them.
Yeah.
None of their kids.
I'm telling you, we keep them alive. We keep them fresh.
And a lot of the times I'm like, my mom fell one time. I was home. Thank God.
Thank God. I remember that.
You know, there's just so many things that I feel like sometimes that is my purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, because either of us don't have kids or our husband yet. But I feel like my
kids may be coming soon.
Yes. We'll talk about IVF eventually. But, you know, that's in our hearts and that's important to us. But I think for now, taking care of the people that brought us into this world is such a blessing. And we're going to be blessed for that. Yeah. So I'm proud of you for that.
Thank you.
So 31 years later, we're now, you know, we came from 12 to 11-year-old Bridget, 12-year-old Gabby. Look at us now. I think I'm super proud of us.
I think we did pretty good.
We're doing really good.
Yeah.
I think we have really lived our life out loud. We've followed our passion.
I have lived a life, girl. I have been outside.
I've been outside.
Yeah,
and I'm proud because we have followed our heart, our passions. What is it like to now be in your 40s, and what is your perspective like? Because I even think just going through the journey with you, you're so much, you're in a softer space than I have ever seen.
1,000%. Wait, what was the question?
What was your perspective now in your 40s that, you know, obviously came from all the journey, because none of it happens till you
but
go through
it. Perspective on what? On life?
Being in your 40s, like, what is your perspective now?
Well, first of all, being in my 40s, I'm like, how the fuck did we get here? When did that happen? Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, is it changed? Like, is family more important now? Like, because I feel like throughout my 20s and my 30s, like, my main focus had always been career. And now, yes, it's career, but it's okay to say that I want family too. I tell everybody that I'm going to go to an IVF doctor next month. And my plan is to eventually build a family. I tell my coworkers, everybody that I run into, because that's truly a passion of mine. And why not? But I wasn't that, I didn't care about that before.
I mean, I think now at 41 and a half, I definitely I'm like, okay, I'm ready for a partner. Because I was definitely like the runaway bride. I mean, not that I had tons of engagements, but I was just like the runaway everything. Like I see it now with the generation behind us, but I didn't have any tangible examples in front of me where you could have both.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like,
maybe unconsciously we thought we had to pick.
No, not on a full frontal level, I thought you did. Like, and also, I'm not even going to put that on the man. For me, the kind of mom I want to be, you know, I want to be there. I want to be involved. That means I can't be on the road like that. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't have been able to do this. And I just, in my mind, I was just like, I'm going to focus on living a life. I don't want to be anybody's girlfriend. I'm definitely not going to be anybody's mom. And I want to do whatever the fuck I want. And now, when I'm old and tired, I'm like, all right, what's up? I'll be your girlfriend. Let me be your mama. What's up?
You would be a great mom, right?
I think so. But yeah, I'm
when I got to my 40s, like I before maybe I suffered from like fear of missing out. Like I don't anymore. Like I don't care if I don't go places and everyone's there. Like that type of thing.
Yeah,
like,
I really don't want to go anywhere. Like I want to be in my house.
100%.
Which I kind of have to like maybe get a little bit out of that as well.
I love being home too. That changed because before that I was like, that was COVID.
That was COVID. For me, it was COVID. Because I thought that if I didn't leave my house, I would die.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I have to be outside. I need to be on a plane. I need to go somewhere. I need to be at, you know, whatever. And now I'm like, oh,
yeah,
whatever. I'm being in my house chilling.
Well, you're part of my BFF episode.
Thank you.
What part? I mean, I know you have tons of girlfriends and your tribe is super solid.
Mm-hmm.
How have you become now a better friend?
I mean, I think that I listen more. I think that I really try to listen more and the part of listening is so that I can gain perspective into whatever you're going through and why it may be affecting you X, Y, and Z, and just try to help if I can. And if
not, you throw me to Novella. Go talk to Novella.
Well, I mean, that was a different situation. But no, but it's just like, and then it's like, if I can tell, for example, like I had a recent situation with a friend where like I know she's going through stuff from our other friends, but she's not necessarily talking about it. So I just, I'm like, hey, if you need me, I'm here. But yeah, I just try to remember that everyone's going through something that you may or may not know, and just try to be there for everyone and be kind and be thoughtful.
Kind and thoughtful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
And there.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks.
What do you think is our favorite memory of us together?
I mean, I know we have so many, but like one of my favorite memories with you, and this may surprise those of you who seen Gabby.
But what are you going to say? Oh my God,
Jesus. Seen Gabby on all these shows and you're like, oh my gosh, she's so cool.
What is she gonna say, guys?
It's not scandalous. Okay. I mean, just a little bit. In my backyard.
Oh!
Getting my boombox with the extension cord, going all the way down to the lake, and sitting there with Thug Passion. We had Hennessy and Alizé. And we sat there. I think I had weed. She doesn't do drugs. And we sat there, and we dissected frame by frame, bar by bar. Well, which album was it? Blueprint 1 of Hov. I'm talking about, like, and if you are a Hov fan, you know that when you listen to Hov, it's like, and my recommendation is, like, listen to Hov sober, then smoke and then listen to it, then drink and then listen to it, then smoke and drink and listen to it.
Dios mío.
Not in the same night, but, like, over time. No, because it's just, like, there's so many hidden
gems.
Just, like,
decoding.
Like, I remember, one of my favorite lines in there and one of that. Which song was it? I forget. But he, like, I remember us sitting by the water. We were like, did he
song
just say
that?
No.
No.
In one of the songs on the album, when he's like, Red Rover, Red Rover, send your hoes over. I'm like, did this nigga just bring up Red Rover from P.E.? Remember that game in P.E.?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Jay's so amazing. Like, and I know that's like the
witty,
most infamous Jay-Z line, but I was blown away. I was like, he played that in P.E. too?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that memory. And then, of course, Memorial Day weekend 2000. I love it. Amazing.
But I love that we were, I'm still very into
Puff's
lyrics.
House. I mean, Puff's House.
Yeah,
remember? New Year's Eve, come on.
Hey, Quincy.
Oh, my God.
Quincy was, like, 20 years old.
But I was like,
Quincy and Christian, girl, you were
no,
like.
No, I was not trying. No, Christian was a kid.
Quincy was like, I'm like, who is this fine specimen?
But a child.
I mean, he might have been legal, but.
He was legal.
Nothing happened.
No, guys. Whatever.
Anyways, no, but that decoding of the album,
that was the best. Dope.
That I don't think any of my friends share my Jay-Z love like you and I.
I mean, I think just hip hop across the board, though.
Yeah,
which is why I miss you in the hip hop world, because now you're all Latin.
I think a lot of people don't know that about me, that I honestly didn't listen to Latin music growing up. I didn't.
At all.
I was all hip hop. I was around the culture.
The biggest hip hop head. Show them your shoes. Show them your shoes. Like, I mean, this, like, she's just, like, she's hip-hop all through and through, baggy clothes, all the things. Like, you and Jamie, like, were more, way more hip-hop than me. I didn't get into the frame until 99.
But then you were the one that worked with everyone.
Yeah, I caught up. I was like, whoa, I need to do some research and catch up.
See how everyone's journey is. I mean, I'm very happy where I'm at.
Same.
Because I also got a taste of working in hip hop for like a split second, and I said, "Oh hell no!" Nah.
Listen, working in Latin, I'm like, forget and sorry hip hop, but I'm like, fuck this. Latin is so amazing. Everybody's so well mannered, on time, gracious. Like
you're like, what?
Yo, it's the most insane experience. I love hip hop, but it's ghetto.
But it's what you love, and I love the how music can, like, really, you know, be the soundtrack of your life, but also be like your life. Like you lived it, you worked it, you still live it.
It was amazing. Like I had a time.
Because your client now is in hip hop.
He is.
That's so dope. To me,
I mean, he's not my client. I think he's my boss.
Yeah, your boss.
Technically. Yeah, he's kind of my boss.
Yeah. Your boss. But at the same time, you're living in your own terms, which is like you're still doing what you love. Me plus one is thriving.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there is looking for an event planner in Miami, Bridget's your girl. So.
I don't do weddings.
No weddings.
I hate weddings.
Except if it's mine. No. Bitch, help me.
I do it as a favor.
Okay, thanks. So to end the, I think this is great.
It's over?
Yeah.
It's over.
I know.
Wait, well, what's your favorite Jay-Z memory with me?
Oh, just general?
No, a specific. You have to pick one.
Not Jay-Z memory.
It wasn't Jay-Z. No, it was memory. Oh,
but I love that part where we were at the lake because I feel like that was, we literally were like, girl, stop. Like we would stop the tape.
Bar by bar.
Look, this is what he means. And then you'd be like,
and
no.
It wasn't a tape. It was a CD. Stop.
Okay, it was a CD. But to me, that's beautiful.
No, I feel like it took me and Hov to like another level together. I was like, I understand him. So now
that's why when I saw he's doing the Book of Hov in Brooklyn, I want to go.
No, I'm going. We have to
when
go.
Are you going?
I'm going to New York in August. We'll talk about
it. Can I go, please?
Let's go.
Because, hello, it's like lyrically, he's a genius. And for us to just be having that moment together, I don't know.
No, we should go.
It's just dope. It'll take us back to the lake if we go back together because all of his lyrics are all over the place.
Let's go.
Okay, so to end it, we're going to do like something fun.
You didn't tell me your...
Yeah, the one at the lake. I think the
That's your favorite?
Well, the lake, Memorial Weekend. I also love the fact that we showed up. We went shopping separately and we showed up with all the same shit.
No, we did not go separately. We were together, bitch. We went to Sawgrass Mall and we spent all our money.
Yeah, and we were wearing same shoes. Like, that's corny.
And it wasn't the same shit. It was just very similar.
I loved Memorial Day weekend. I loved... what else?
There's so many.
There's so many things. Puff's house.
I don't think... Have we done L.A. together? I don't think we've done L.A. together.
No. But we want to do Usher. Not want to do.
We're going
to Vegas. So, okay. Flash round. We're going to end the episode doing something fun. Obviously, there's a theme here. We love Jay-Z. So, I wanted to do something fun. So, I'm going to name something. And then we have to answer at the same time and see, like, if we have the same answer.
Okay.
It's about Jay-Z.
Okay.
All right. Favorite Hova album? The Black Album.
Really? Yes. The Black Album?
I love the Black Album.
I feel like I listened to that twice and never listened to it again.
Bitch.
No. Reasonable Doubt. What do you
mean? I mean, really? Reasonable Doubt, obviously, is, like, the freaking best. It's the OG.
That's not your favorite?
I mean, it's one of my favorites, but if I were to pick an album, you're
going to be buried with the Black Album.
I would pick, or
we should,
Blueprint.
We should do a Jay-Z.
Or Blueprint.
We should do a Jay-Z podcast. Like, just
right.
Jay-Z,
I think this is pretty much Jay-Z podcast.
Okay, I guess the Black Album for you.
The Black Album.
No.
Whack. Fave Jay lyric or bar? That just kind of stands out for you.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
I'll say mine.
Tell me.
This is one of my favorite songs, too. I give my women tennis bracelets, trips to Venice, get their winners replaced with the sun. It ain't even fun no more. I'm jaded.
I don't even know what song that is.
Allure.
Okay. Mine,
I like that he's giving his women tennis bracelets.
A wise man once said, don't argue with fools.
Because people from a distance can't tell who is who
all day.
I love that one.
Jade. Let's hang out.
Yo, Jay.
Let's hang out, bro. Yo, what the fuck? You owe me a picture.
That one was dope.
That's the best line.
Because there's so much truth in that.
All day. That's why I don't argue with losers. I'm like, aye, please, shut up.
Bruh. Jay, Fave, okay, we already answered. Fave Jay memory together, forget it.
Duh. That's it?
Fave Jay music video. Big Pimpin'.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just a vibe. That one, no. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. It was just like, that was life.
BFF edition, you did so good.
I love that.
It's over.
It's over?
You want to keep going?
Yeah.
I don't know if we have time. It's running out.
Are you guys in the union?
No, we're good. It was good. Thank you guys for joining us. See, the first edition of BFF editions was dope. I think this is where you get to know me a little bit better. Bridget had a lot of gems to share and it was fun.
I hope you guys liked it.
Of course. Thank you, and stay tuned for the next episode.
Bye. Bye.
You're listening to Girls Gone Boss,
hosted by Gabby Ortega.